the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast.
Hey guys, welcome back to another episode of the Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast. Like always, I got Jason in the room, and I also got Jeff and Brandon in today. And we're going to devote, I guess, about 25 minutes to peanuts. So what do y'all guys think about the peanut crop so far this year?
Hey, wait, have you ever noticed how loud that intro music is in your ears?
Well, it's loud in your ears because the decibels it was recorded at.
What does that mean?
Don't worry about it. It all blends down easy when we fix it on the backside.
It means the music doesn't have a radio voice like Bobby.
sounds technical there.
Smack.
Smack. That's right.
Jeff got you on that one.
That's okay. I will turn the thing off, and you can figure out how to punch all these fancy buttons, as Angus said last week, on your own.
Did he really say that? Fancy buttons?
I think he said fancy buttons.
That's what he did, and then right after that, Whitney forgot to hit record.
They talk for like 20 minutes, and then I walk around and go, hey guys, y'all know y'all aren't recording this stuff.
Ouch. That's harsh.
All right, Goobers, where are we at?
Sorry, Brendan. Brendan's here again.
Yeah, so, you know, we're I think, looking pretty good on the peanut crop. It seemed like about the time that it dried out this year was we're able to start planting peanuts. So that worked out pretty well compared to last year.
So when do you normally start planting? I know nothing about peanuts because they historically haven't been a crop I've dealt with. So what's a normal planting date? You said it dried out about the time you planted.
Yeah, so it's really similar to cotton. So about the time you start planting cotton is when you start planting peanuts. Yeah, usually we try to shoot for that 68 degrees soil temp. This year, what about the third week in April is when we were probably around 65 with a good 7-day forecast. So some of the earliest peanuts were planted around that third week in April, and then, you know, planted all through May. But majority of the crop, I would say, was planted from May 1st to probably May 20th time period.
So where are the acres concentrated this year?
So it's spread out, but I would say we have pockets, you know, southeast part of the state, so it'd be Hattiesburg and south of there, and then northeast part of the state, so Aberdeen, and then all the way up in the Itawamba County, Lee County, probably I would say the Western Hills area up along the Delta. Still a few acres in the Delta, but mostly probably up near the Clarksdale area.
Yeah, we saw what I said was a big block of peanuts, probably the biggest block of peanuts I've ever seen in Mississippi, you know, in Cahoma County. I guess we were in Cahoma County.
So the biggest block in the Delta that you've ever seen. How about that?
Yeah.
Yeah, they just popped out of nowhere on us the other day.
I think we were in Cahoma County. We were right there on the county line.
It was, somewhere close in there.
So
yeah.
Where are acres at this year, Brandon? How many acres of peanuts do you think we have?
I'm thinking we'll probably be in the 23 to 25,000 range.
So we're up a little bit from last year.
Yeah, about 20%. Because we were around 19 last year.
It's been decently consistent over the last few years, hasn't it? I mean, I always think 20-25, yeah. And I mean, I know that's a range, you know, with that number, but that's kind of the number I always have in my head.
Yeah, and I would say last year's my first year here, and we were around 19, so that was probably down a little bit, and then it went back up this year, and mostly that's due to, you know, growers that are growing peanuts are also growing cotton. So the margins are just look a little better on the peanut side.
When you're planting peanuts, you said they planted throughout May. You know, because we'll plant soybeans and, you know, thousands of acres at a pop, tens of thousands of acres in a week, you know, if the weather's good. But with peanut harvest being slow like it is, what is kind of the general plan that guys have for planting peanuts? Say you got, you know, whatever a nice round number of peanut acres is, how do you spread out the planting? You know, kind of what rate of planting did they use?
Yeah, so you're probably looking more in the, you know, planting 50 to 100 acres a day, or, you know, something like that. It's always best to try to spread it out as much as you can. And I'd say that was probably a nice thing about this year is we had the weather to do that. and be able to stretch it out a little bit. Like I can remember last year coming here, it seemed like you had 10 days to plant your whole crop, and you know, it was all really mostly after mid-May, which is getting pretty late for peanuts, especially in the northern half of the state here. You know, being able to stretch it out and get in early is always a benefit, you know, come harvest time in the fall with peanut being a little slower to harvest, since you got to make two passes and just, you know, lower harvest speed as well.
Jeff looks weird with that thing around his neck over there.
Don't bring me into this.
What do you mean don't bring you into it? It just looks
I'm
weird.
I'm sitting here learning something.
It's not a video podcast.
Well, we can put a video on it.
Describe it to our listeners, Bobby.
It can only be described as a tan buff hanging around the neck of one Jeffrey Gore. It doesn't look as sharp as the one that Don has, but it doesn't look as warm as that black one you've been wearing.
Yeah, black one's hot.
You know, the entomologist, when we talked about this last week, is it's our time of year. We're outside all day, every day right now. And I've been to the dermatologist a lot over the last year and a half, getting stuff cut and burn off of me.
Does those things really protect from the sun, though?
Well, I don't. You know, them with sunscreen can't hurt. And I got a big floppy hat that I wear now.
Oh, I started wearing the floppy hat this year, and it makes a big difference.
I mean, that's what they're sold
for,
isn't it? I mean, this time of year.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah,
obviously,
to keep
the
sun off of you.
You're not trying to keep warm.
Well, I'm not trying to sidetrack the peanut thing, but his looks better than yours.
Thanks.
Well, you got a deer hunting.
No, man, that's the old one. No, this one's completely different.
I never thought about it before, but on a day like today, where it's what 95 degrees, I can wet it a little bit out of the water cooler and wrap it around my neck and pull it up over my ears, and it really does keep you cool, keeping the sun off of you.
Interesting. Anyway, proceed, Brendan.
Yeah, so
Bobby has a short attention span.
No, I don't.
That's good. It helps break it up a little bit. But, yeah, so planting was good. There was a few, you know, issues where we had some stand issues where we were kind of expecting that coming into this year.
For what reasons were you – what do you think caused
– Well, you know, it's always hard to pin it down on one thing, but we were anticipating lower seed quality this year with the, you know, most of the seed that's being planted here is being produced in the southeast, and it was real dry down there last year. So we were expecting some lower seed quality. So there were some issues where it didn't seem like, you know, there was some lots that didn't have good germ, but again, too, we had that cold snap in early May, so, you know, peanuts planted right before that, too, just the cold weather, you know, could have resulted in some of that. So I'd say that's probably been our biggest issue. You know, it's just it's a tough way to start the year. But other than that, things have been rolling along. You know, now we're getting into July and August where disease starts popping up, so that's probably another thing that is a little bit different about peanut is just the susceptibility to disease. So always keeping a lookout for things like southern blight and leaf spot and staying on top of that. And then now, you know, it's getting a little dry across the state as well, so hopefully we can get some rain this week.
Going back to planting, you know, this year was one of the worst thrips years that we've had in a long time, especially in cotton. I didn't really hear the issues in peanut that I did in cotton. And even in our plots that we have, I didn't see the issues with thrips that I saw in cotton. And it's the same species that's infesting them both. And I think, you know, one of the big differences is in cotton, we're primarily relying on seed treatments, which is a real low rate. I think most guys now are doing a pretty good job of putting Admire Pro in furrow or one of the granular insecticides.
What's Admire Pro?
Yeah. It's imidacloprid.
Ah, the old imidacloprid again.
The old neonicotinoid. You want to try to say that today, Bobby?
No, I never can say that word. I still can't say it.
But the, you know, the big difference is when you spray it in furrow like we do in peanuts, we're putting a real high dose out there, a high rate relative to what's on seed. And so it lasts a whole lot longer, and we got a lot better control of the thrips in peanuts than we did in cotton.
I didn't really see as many issues this year. In fact, I felt like it was worse last year on some of the thrips issues. And that, I guess that's something interesting too. How would you say, as far as the thrips pressure this year compared to other years, would you say it was earlier or later or about the same?
It was, well, both.
Okay.
They were much more persistent this year than they have been in the past. And weather has a huge impact on thrips populations, especially rainfall. And so just like you were talking about the conditions being really good for planting, we weren't getting a lot of rain, especially not heavy rains. It wasn't killing the thrips off. And heavy rains will knock thrips populations back, not just in peanuts or the crop that we're trying to manage them in, but in the wild host as well. So you don't have that constant source moving in.
Wild host. We talked about that a couple of weeks ago too.
Like pigweed?
Alternate host is what Angus used. So y'all entomologists need to get on this wild alternate.
It depends on what insect you're talking about.
Ooh.
Well, what's the difference between
in the
wild
context.
And alternate? Okay. I'm just, y'all said I wasn't paying attention and I was easily distracted. And I'm trying to tell you, I've paid attention for the last 4 weeks.
And you've done a fantastic job.
Proceed.
We're proud of you.
Proceed.
I don't remember where I was now.
You were talking about imidacloprid and wild host and alternate host.
Well, I think I was done. Is that the population was just a lot more persistent over a longer period of time this year because of the weather.
Yeah. And that's what, when I started to see a little more damage, it was probably a little later. And maybe that was probably the imidacloprid starting to break a little bit. But by that time, you know, the peanut plant's a little bigger, probably can deal with it more. Like we didn't have in some areas we did kind of wet spring at the seedling stage that really slows down the plant where you're waterlogged and then you get the thrips come in.
And all that aside, all that's in the past right now. So what we're talking about now is you're getting into disease season is what you said when you first come in. So what's the most significant diseases that you're dealing with?
Probably the one that scares me the most would be southern blight or southern stem rot. That's can cost you the most yield, and it's also probably the hardest to control because it's down at, it really starts at the crown of the plant. So it can be difficult, you know, this time of year to get fungicides down in the canopy to get activity, especially in dry land situations.
That's the stuff they always used to talk about we're going to come in here at midnight and spray and the leaves will be up and we blow it down in the crown.
Yeah, so I had a call about that this morning.
Is that an old wives' tale?
No, it actually works. So the peanut leaves, they fold up at night. So you can actually get greater penetration deeper into the canopy.
Jason's up there thinking about touching a mimosa tree either falling asleep from that brisket eating at lunch.
Now, it's been shown to work, and it would be just getting it down further in the canopy. Same if you have overhead irrigation and you irrigate a quarter, half inch a day or two after application, you can wash it down or time it before rain.
Well, I mean, it is a legume, and a lot of legumes do that. Soybeans don't necessarily, but a lot of wild legumes, Bobby.
Alternate host. Alternate host.
Weedy legumes, a lot of them fold up at
like
night.
A coffee bean?
Yeah, that's what I'm thinking about specifically.
All wild legumes tend to be good alternate host.
Fascinating.
Okay.
See, I threw them both in there at once that time.
We are officially in the ditch.
No, we're not. We're talking about peanut diseases. And we're carrying out.
But yeah, it's worked and it's been shown to work for quite a while now. In fact, is Tim Brenneman, he was at the Mississippi Peanut Growers Association this winter and gave a talk about it, and he had done a lot of work on it, and it was kind of interesting. He came back from Africa and saw that they were spraying at night, and he saw him doing that, and he was like, well, let's try that here. And then he started actually doing the research behind it and quantifying it, and it's been shown to work. And this would be like, you know, either pre-dusk or pre-dawn, and he was saying that pre-dawn may actually be better because there's still a lot of dew on the leaves too, so you can get the fungicide to spread out a little bit more.
You know, I never thought about it before, but that's probably something that we need to look at from an insect standpoint, because right now we're in a big bollworm flight. We've talked about that in soybeans and cotton.
Massive egg lay,
as Bobby titled it.
You like that, eh? You're smiling.
Oh, yeah. And so anytime we talk about insects, I'm smiling. That's why I do what I do. But this time of year, a lot of those insecticide applications are going to be co-applied with a fungicide. And if they're going out at night, targeting these defoliating caterpillars, getting good leaf coverage, and those leaves covered good is very important. And the idea of the fungicide is trying to get the fungicide to the soil surface rather than on the leaves. So maybe something to consider in the future, that when, you know, doing that, we may sacrifice some insect control.
Yeah, and we talked about time of day. I mean, not related to peanuts, but related to your insecticide applications. Three or four weeks ago, we had talked about that.
Yeah,
because you need one for one, and the other one for the fungicide. Yeah, that would be interesting to see.
Yeah, actually, that's kind of an interesting thing too. Is sometimes it's related to this. Is you get a lot of questions about tank mixing fungicides and herbicides.
Co-applying is. Jeff likes to say.
Co-applying. Yeah.
That was last year I said that, and you remember that now.
Mine like a steel trap.
Or something like it.
The co-application of herbicides and fungicides. But the worst one's clethodim, right, cleaning up grasses. So then you're targeting, say, southern blight, you know, down in the canopy, and it could be the same with apogee. Typically you put crop oil.
So, what's apogee?
It's a growth regulator.
So it's like picks for peanuts.
Picks for peanuts. Okay. It has a nice ring to it. Then you're getting crop oil, and you know it's sticking to the leaves and the top of the canopy. So does that reduce efficacy, you know, on soil borne diseases? I don't know. But typically, what I'll recommend is, you know, if you got southern blight out there, it's probably more of an issue and could cost you more money than maybe some grasses. So probably maybe, you know, not put the crop oil on there.
Yeah, because by this point, you know, the damage is done on the, competition loss due to the weeds. So, you know, you're down. And a lot of the grasses are headed out anyway, and you're not doing any good spraying them after they've headed out to start with, because you're not going to kill them.
Yeah.
So the southern blight, is that the same southern blight? Is the pathogen the same as the pathogen that causes southern blight on soybeans? I assume that it is.
Yeah, Sclerotium rothsii. Okay. So it's the same. It just can be a little bit more, I guess, detrimental on peanuts. Peanut doesn't really have as much of a woody stem, so it can't really protect itself. And it can move underground. So since the pods grow underground, when it gets dry, it can move underground. So you may walk out to a field and not really see a whole lot of symptoms on the crown or the root at that point, because you can have a lot more below ground. So you wouldn't even know to dig the level of incidence. So that's always a scary part.
So once you have it in the soil like that on the pods, I mean, what do you do at that point for it?
Oh, if it's moving underground?
Yeah.
I mean,
is there anything you can do?
Well, then you try to maximize getting fungicide down to the canopy. So if you have irrigation, you can overhead, you can rinse it in, but, you know, trying to time it, you know, before rainfall, if you can, you know, higher GPAs, spraying at night, so trying to do all those things to maximize getting it down to the crown of the plant at the soil surface there.
So does it infect above the ground?
Yeah.
Or the soil surface?
Yeah, right at the soil surface there on the stem, and then it, it can start moving below ground.
So does it move on the root or through the root? I mean, is...
Well, yeah, so the, it'll start actually... It'll start moving on the stem, the root, but it can start moving on the pegs because the pegs are...
But I guess is it systemic or is it, I mean, on the exterior of the root?
Yeah, the pathogen?
Yeah.
Yeah, so the it'll the mycelia will grow on the outside of the, okay. the tissue and then it, it starts digesting the tissue basically.
Yeah, I mean, that's the one thing I noticed is being an entomologist working in peanuts is I've feel like the Lone Ranger a lot of times the big issues in peanuts are from a pest standpoint are really weeds and disease.
Yeah. Yeah, I would say it'd be like, you know, working in cotton, you'd have to have, you know, some level of knowledge of entomology, right?
Not if you got a Jeff.
Well yeah.
If you got a Jeff, you just tell him when you come by, spray my field too.
Yep.
I love you, brother. All right, so Brendan, you talked a lot about using irrigation to get your fungicides into the crown. When do you generally start irrigating peanut plants? What are their requirements? What are the triggers? Do you water them like soybeans or something different?
Yeah, I mean, unless it's real dry, there's probably not a whole lot of need to irrigate early season is typically what I recommend. I mean, if you're having a lot of stunting, obviously it's time, but you know it's not a whole lot of water demand at that time, and they're not blooming yet either, so it's all vegetative growth, so you're not really going to hurt your yield.
But from
it's moderately drought
from a weed control standpoint, don't you want canopy closure as fast as possible?
Sure, yeah. So I mean it would help on that for sure, but just from a impacts of drought on yield, I would say you're not at the most sensitive time there, where once you get probably let's just call it 45 50 days to, you know, 90 100 days, that kind of mid-season is where drought's going to hurt the crop yield the most. And then as far as when to cut off irrigation, that's a little tricky because even though after that 100 days, you're probably not going to hurt your yield as much from impacts of drought. We always got to be worried about if it is dry late season, is it going to develop aflatoxin, which is a huge concern in peanut because it's a, you know, edible crop that humans eat. And if you test hot on aflatoxin, you're probably going to bring in about 40%. Of what you would have per ton. So trying to avoid late season just to minimize aflatoxin production if it's real dry. So usually about 120 days is when I would think about cutting off irrigation just to kind of make you there to the end and not have, you know, say like last September, we had areas where we didn't get a whole lot of rainfall September. So you're looking about, you know, 100 days all the way to harvest where we didn't have any rainfall, which is prime conditions for aflatoxin development.
About how much of the state's acreage is irrigated? It just popped in my head.
Only like 20%. So a lot more dry land.
So can you use irrigation to minimize aflatoxin?
Yeah. So aflatoxin is produced by Aspergillus. The conditions that trigger that toxin development is hot and dry. So by irrigating, you have moisture, cools the soil, and you can reduce the risk of having aflatoxin development.
Is there a difference between fire irrigation and overhead irrigation? I'm just thinking about the way the peanut plant grows and, you know, a lot of biomass that's, you know, right down close to the soil. Is there an advantage to one method of irrigation over the other for, you know, just something like maximizing yield, you know, not considering, you know, disease pressure and things like that, just agronomically?
I mean, to be honest, I've never compared them side by side, so I'm not really sure if one's going to give better yields than the other. The only thing I can think of is when you're putting on, you know, peanut doesn't really like wet feet, So you got to saturate the soil pretty good when you furrow irrigate, whereas when you're using overhead, it's not as saturated. So
yeah, and that's what I was thinking. That's what kind of where my mind was on that.
But again, if it stays dry for a long period of time, you may wish you had it saturated like that, because you can get in the situations on sandy soils with overhead where you just keep the pivot running because you just can't keep up.
Is there any late season insect things we need to think about, Jeff?
Well, the only thing is, you know, when you start talking about hot, dry conditions, the one thing that comes to mind is spider mites, regardless of what crop you're talking about. So that can be an issue over the next month or so.
Abamectin, right? Up. Abamectin.
Not labeled in peanuts.
Damn. See, I was wrong.
Actually, that's a good point to bring up, is we don't have a lot labeled in peanuts for spider mites. Historically, it's been co-mite 2 was the only thing that was labeled. And the issue with that is we hadn't used co-mite 2 in something like cotton for years because we've had resistance to it. So it doesn't work very well. But fortunately, this year, we did get a registration for Portal, which is another miticide, gives us another option. And that actually came about from some work that we did here at Mississippi State, showing the efficacy of Portal in peanuts and the lack of efficacy with co-mite 2. So that registration actually went through the IR4 program to get that registration.
That's pretty slick.
Yep.
So that's the go-to then if you have late season spider mites pop up.
Yeah, especially, I mean, we can get multiple mite species in peanuts. I had a call this morning from down south of some red mites in peanuts, red spider mites. And they tend to be fairly easy to control. The co-mite, too, would probably do a great job on those.
Does it make the plants look like a cotton plant? A spider mite, you know, red and all flared up?
No, it actually looks a lot different in peanuts. When they're first starting out, you'll see some yellow stippling on the leaves.
What's that?
You lost Jason with your big words. Yellow dots, Jason. Yeah, that'd be yellow dots.
Yeah, yellow specks on leaves.
Well, why do I just call them yellow specks? What is a stippling? I've never heard that. I've been sitting on these entomology podcasts for 3 years now. That's the first time I heard stippling.
The only time we ever talk about stippling is when we're talking about garden flea hoppers. They stipple.
Okay.
Cotton. And I think stippling's like an artist term where you just make a drawing with a bunch of dots. I think. I don't know that.
Above my pay grade.
Man.
Yeah.
All right. Proceed with it.
We never really see the reddening, but when they blow up in peanuts, there's no doubt about what you have, because they'll cause webbing all across the top of the plants. And, I mean, when they blow up, they get bad in peanuts. It's actually the only, I almost said insect, the only arthropod pest that really scares me in peanuts.
What would be a non-arthropod pest that scares you in peanuts?
Well, southern blight, pigweed, grasses.
Spider mites. So that's your top three: pigweed, southern blight, and spider mites. And
well, you said non-arthropod.
Well, you said that's the only arthropod that scares you. So then I lumped them together and said pigweed, southern blight, and spider mite.
I don't know about all them others, but from a insect arthropod management standpoint, that's the only one that really scares me. That can. It's like.
It could wipe you out.
It's like plant bugs in cotton. That's one of the few things that can take the crop from you.
Now, see, everybody understands plant bugs in cotton.
Yeah.
Okay.
And that's from a, would you say that's from an actual, it's not attacking the pods, right? It's because it's defoliating and reducing canopy.
Defoliating, they just completely suck that plant down and kill. I mean, I've seen them kill mature peanut plants when they're bad.
Wow. So where are you headed from here, Brandon?
I guess we'll just, we can wrap up and, you know, hopefully we're at the end of the road here, just managing some late season disease, and then we'll be ready to start digging. Which is always my favorite time of the year.
Well, I hope you get some favorable weather for that, too. We've been saying that on every show. But
how hard is it to get a peanut digger in the ground when it's as dry as it is out here right now?
Well, if you're flat, you're probably not going to get it in the ground. So that's an advantage of raised beds, is you can usually dig a little drier, which is one thing I learned here last year, because I'd never, you know, grown peanuts on raised beds until last year. So, yeah, that's an advantage.
Then you're like, this is the bee's knees, yep, right here.
Yeah,
baby.
Yeah. I wasn't so sure about it, and then we started digging, and I was like, yeah, I like this. I think it's in dry land situations. I mean, it's a good safety net to have there.
One of the issues that I've heard about the last couple of years from a peanut standpoint has been the amount of foreign material or dirt or soil. Is it dirt or soil, Bobby? If it's in a peanut truck, is it dirt or soil?
It doesn't matter, because I was told a long time ago, if you play in it, roll in it, and work with it every day, you can call it dirt as long as you're not in a lab, then it's soil.
Okay. So we get a lot of dirt in with the peanuts when they go to the buying point. Is there anything people can do to minimize that now or as they get closer to digging?
Yeah, I mean, It's a tough thing to deal with, because, I mean, probably the biggest thing that leads to it is just not, you know, digging at unoptimal conditions. But obviously, if you're trying to get peanuts out of the field, I mean, you just got to go. I would say probably you can get, you know, dirt and foreign material if it's too dry, but probably the worst is digging too wet. So that's what I would try to avoid. Because then you're basically digging up mud, and you got mud caked on to the pods, and then, you know, they don't ever come off until, you know, it goes through the machine and into the basket. So just avoiding digging too wet if you can, which usually at that point it's probably better not to dig anyways, because you'd be going real slow and, you know, clogging up the digger, and it's just that's a nightmare. So
Jeff, y'all counting bugs this afternoon?
Absolutely.
I got a Farm Bureau meeting.
I'm not counting bugs, so.
My Farm Bureau meeting is going to be on Zoom and air conditioner.
We're actually putting out some urea treatments this afternoon. Not from a soil fertility standpoint, Bobby, not getting into your world.
Oh, I don't care.
All right, well, Brendan, Jeff, thank y'all. I know y'all got things to do. Bobby's got things he's got to do. And
so Jason sounds like he don't have anything to do.
Well, I got things to do. I mean, y'all have hard schedules, though. I don't have anything pressing on my schedule this afternoon. So thanks for coming by, Brennan.
Yeah, yeah, thanks for having me.
And Jeff, thanks for taking time out of your bug counting. And, of course, if we can do anything for y'all, just give us a call. Y'all got anything you want to sign off with?
Yeah, he's making a co-application of urea and insecticide so those bugs won't stipple his rice crop.
That's right.
or get bounced to a wild alternate host.
The Mississippi Crop Situation Podcast is produced by the Mississippi State University Extension Service.